I love the sound of a standing desk getting operated on a Sunday afternoon. It means you're ready for business.
My lungs are full. The desk is erect. And I don't think
that's no, it's the best prepared. Word. It's ready for engagement. It is ready for what you bring to it and the intensity that you and performative element of your podcasting.
You know, I was going to say before we even do that, I recorded a podcast this week in person, like the first time I basically, outside of the one podcast I did with Mickey Drexler and then another test podcast I did alongside that with you way back when. But I did this podcast in person and we sit down in this, you know, nice podcast room and I spilled a huge coffee right onto my computer and just fried it right in the beginning. I'm like, how do I recover from this?
Oh my God. That's amazing. It's sort of, I forget that that's even possible. Can you do these in person? I thought you could only do them through Zoom.
we were on Zoom, but in the same room. So
no. Incredible.
Yeah.
That I was thinking now that as we start to go back out into public and we're back into social situations, we're going to have to prepare ourselves for someone says, oh yeah, Michael Williams, he's got a podcast. Silence at the dinner party, everyone turns to you and you're like, oh no, I mean, I do, but it's not who I am. I do other things.
It's really,
yes, I do have one.
It's really a value add for my newsletter. It's like, not.
Oh my God, this is getting worse and worse by the minute. What is that?
Here, just scan this QR code and that'll get you 15% off for a month.
They're like, are you analyzing tech firms? Are you in the VC? Like, no, it's more about kind of in the lifestyle space. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. But there is the social, now that one has a book out in the world, I unfortunately put people, whether I try to or not, in the situation where they have to feel compelled to apologize for not having read the book. I'm like, I don't expect you to have read the book. It's been out 2 weeks. And also you live a busy life, but it's similar to people say like, oh, I know you've got a podcast. I've really been meaning to listen to it. I'm just like, okay. But they're like, but I do know you. I'm like, yeah, no pressure. It's okay. But you should hear Williams. His analysis is incredible.
I've been playing the audiobook every day as I drop my daughter off at school and pick her up. And one day she said, this man's very pompous, daddy. And I said, yeah, you have no idea.
Print. You're like celebrating 15 years.
A mutual friend of ours, actually, Al James, I spoke with him last week, who's an avid fisherman, steelhead maniac. And he said, I read David's book. I really liked it. Mm. And I almost said, you know, are you surprised you almost liked it?
That's the tough one.
No, but he didn't. He said he was into it. I don't want to plug your book anymore.
No, we
like,
don't.
I feel like done. At this point I need to start charging you if we're going to.
No,
really
for
do
sure. Absolutely. No, we're going to. Last week we were talking about, do we have anything other general business to discuss? You're at the beach. It's a Sunday. I went to Red Hook. It sort of feels like a,
I think I know that bar that you were at in Red Hook.
Sonny's.
Yeah. That place is old school almost.
Yeah,
as
exactly.
Do you ever think about, you know, the freeway being right there and just like the impact it had. I mean, do you ever consider that? Cause they drove that. Basically, Robert Moses put that freeway PQE like right there through that neighborhood and basically destroyed it like on purpose, you know.
Robert Moses, not a big fan, but I think where Sonny's is a little mellower out in Red Hook. I mean, the fun thing about going to Red Hook is you take the ferry out there and it's just a crazy experience because it's so natural and you're so joyful and so unlike everything else you do in New York, which is tightly focused and overly intense. And this is like something you would do in Sweden or I don't know, Denmark or something. And so you get out there and there's plenty of sky and parking spaces and people are relaxed. And I'm like, whoa, this is strange. I feel very nervous here. Everybody's so comfortable. It's like being in California.
I have to ask, were you going to IKEA? What were you doing out there?
Hey,
I mean, is
merch,
private
photo shoots,
business?
I mean, as bad as it gets, photo shoots for Coggins collaborations every, you
oh,
know,
good.
You know, just you, actually.
You don't rest on Sunday. You're just working.
I'm out there. I'm out there on the 10 a.m. ferry getting it done.
That's great.
but I definitely
can't wait for the content.
Content's coming at you this week. Get ready, everybody. But there's definitely as someone who lives in the West Village, I see countless people because it's very confusing in this area where the streets are kind of at angles and 10th Street intersects with 4th Street and plenty of things that would confuse anybody. And there are always people looking at their phones or their maps. If they're European, when Europeans used to come to Europe and they would actually pull out a paper map and these poor family of Germans can't figure out where they are. Or people walked at that slightly slower speed when you can tell they don't know where they are. And it's sort of endearing or sort of annoying, depending on where they're from. But when I get out to Red Hook, I walk also at this very clearly speed that's slightly slower than someone who's in the neighborhood, where I'm either admiring the stores or just taking it all in. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm one of those people and dressed probably not in overalls, or some person in Red Hook who looks very different. And I feel very self-conscious because I'm doing the thing that kind of aggravates me when I'm in.
Even in New York, you're like the odd man out with your brown suit
constantly.
And everything.
I was like, I'm sorry, is there a place that can hem these trousers on Sunday? I just got off the ferry. And
excuse me, do you know where I can find a light beer nearby?
It's Sunny's. Actually, I went into this kind of a, I was just sitting by the water and you could like order barbecue, but you'd go into this grocery store to buy beer and it was just surprisingly easy and fun. And you're just sitting there staring at the water, drinking cans of German beer. And it was
so they said it's like one of those places where they're like, we don't sell beer, but just go in the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's nice.
That's like in Kauai, there's this little like poke place that's inside. You had to go in this like very dilapidated grocery store to get it. And it's kind of like, oh, this isn't an adventure, you know, but the system works, you know?
Well, when Prune, the great restaurant that sadly closed right at the beginning of the pandemic, when Prune opened before it became Prune and Gabrielle Hamilton wrote a wonderful book and became famous, they didn't have a liquor license. And so you would go and order your Bronzino for two. And then one of you would like run around the corner to the liquor store that they recommended to buy a bottle of white wine from a guy behind bulletproof glass, if you can believe it, in the East Village. And then you'd make it back just as the food was arriving. You're like, what is happening here? And now they went on to greater things.
Yeah, that's amazing. I feel like we used to go to some Italian restaurant, I can't remember, and they would send basically everyone around to, I can't remember exactly the details of this, but I remember going and then people at the wine store, once you told them you just came from wherever, they're like, okay, here you go.
It's right, exactly. Like, ordering? Oh, did you get the bistecca? Like, can you recommend this?
Yeah.
It's a nice, that's one of those things that it seems like it's going to be, you know, not a so-called deal breaker, but some sort of speed bump. And then it just becomes part of the charm. And you got to go around the corner and you're like, fun. Okay, great. I'll go around the corner.
And it also, it's like it separates the people that know that don't know, the people that show up with the beer or whatever.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and because they know you have to bring it yourself.
So last week you were asking Goodfellas versus Casino. I'm not sure where we finally came down on that.
I think you punted on that a little bit. It was like
I definitely punted.
It was a real PR person answer.
What? That's when they asked Michael Jordan about New Coke, and he said Coke is Coke. They both taste great, and it's like, oh my God. But I was just thinking of like the versus issue. So we're gonna try a few things here. I'm gonna start you with a few, and we'll see.
Okay, and I have a couple for you. Okay, although people say I'm always unprepared for these things, and
I say when anyone describes anyone else I know as unprepared, I'm like, they have a complete life. They're doing a lot of other things. I have a little more time to. All right. So Bronco versus Blazer. Big one.
Oh, are we talking current or?
We'll start with the classic and then we can get up to the new.
I'm always, you know, I worked at a Ford dealership growing up. I've always just been more of like a Ford person. So I think the Bronco is more iconic. I think the Blazer in that one era when it was huge, not like not the 90s Blazer, although I do like that Blazer, that was like more heavy metal, you know? Mm. So I feel like if you're, you know, you're just like, you're the wrong, you know, born on the wrong side of the tracks, you got the Blazer, you know, you're hardcore. And then the Bronco is like a little bit more, you know, I always think about, Dazed and Confused. You remember the coach had that Blazer and he pulls up when they're like all, you know, talking about signing the forms and he's like in his little Blazer.
Oh, so that, good.
That's
good
what call. I think about. Or sorry, he was in the Bronco. I said that wrong. So I'm all the Bronco all the way, even up to OJ.
Okay. Well, what is your kind of favorite era of Bronco then? Is that when you worked there, when you were?
That was in the 90s. No, I think probably the 80s versions. I don't know like what generation that is, but the bigger one, you know, OJ drove, that was like a, what year was that? 90, 95, 94. I think that body style is from 94.
Mm-hmm.
I think the OJ thing happened in 95.
The verdict was read in 95. I don't pride myself on knowing or not knowing this, but that era, I mean, it seems to me like a dark brown Bronco from that era is good. Of course, like so many. No, of
but
these
the things, 90s Broncos weren't. I don't
love want them as earlier much. One.
Yeah, 80s. I think that the generation before the 90s Bronco is the one I like. And if they're two-tone, you know, then it's like even better.
It's so funny. That's the perfect example of something that's kind of designed to be utilitarian, like muscular and a little provocative. It's like more Jeep than a Jeep. And then over the years, it starts to represent something else. And if I saw that like perfectly restored Bronco and Montauk, somehow it would make me mad because then it's serving a different purpose for that person. It's kind of like if they're wearing a t-shirt for a band I don't believe they really like or something.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they just like came to it later and they, you know, they have the perfect version of it.
Exactly.
A lot of times, like I, you know, there's a big whole, you know, argument about if they're lifted or if they cut the wheel wells, and you know that makes them less authentic. And then there's all the purist people; those are like the people I roll with typically. That are like, oh, if it's not like all original, I don't want to like. That's disgusting. You know, I see the perfect, like redone version in my neighborhood all the time. And
really?
they look cool, but I think that's a little played out. Like I would want like a more original one, but I still think, I don't know.
What's the color in your neighborhood of the Bronco? What's the restored color that looking at?
It's always like, it's pastel, you know, black. No, it's like, it's not even that well done. It's always like black with like a black plate or you know, like very canary yellow, you know, it's like kind of like defendery,
gotcha,
you know, without the green one. That's a whole thing. You know, I think it's tricky. I like that those SUVs were built on like a truck chassis. Like they were closer sort of in kind to a truck than they were an SUV.
Right.
Like they didn't ever like replatform those things. You know, they just like built that on like an F-150 body or whatever chassis, you know, so it drives, you sit more upright. It drives more like a truck. Doesn't, in that sense, like I liked that, you know, but all of that has changed, right?
So it rolls over like a truck, but that's like, I don't even think the category SUV existed. We should run a check on that and find out when one of our listeners, I don't feel like Googling it, tells us that category didn't existed. Quick question, just because I'm sure people want to know. I didn't know. Tell us a little about the Williams Ford dealership. I hadn't read that line in your CV.
That was one of the best jobs I ever had. I was like a porter, valet, like prep guy. I was in high school. I worked there. And I was probably like, it was my like 16, 17, 18. I worked there for 3 years, probably. It was wild. You know, they would like have us doing moving cars between the main lot and then the storage lot. They would have us do like dealer trades. So I would like drive some car like to Columbus or wherever. It was wild. It was so much fun. And like, you're just around the salesman. You see like all the shady stuff that happens like with the salesman and they're, you know, just the whole universe like at a car dealership is crazy. So, and we would like prep all these cars, like if they get sold, and it was like a whole thing. Like, and it's funny, you know, I liked being around it as a high school kid. Like it was pretty fun to be around. Plus you got to drive all these cars and like all the used cars, like everyone would come in on trade, and it was fun. I would, you know, I'm into cars, like not insanely, but into cars enough that made that like, you know, really, really fun, especially because I had to do like manual labor for every other job, like hard labor working for my dad, where he would, you know, I wasn't like the boss's son in the sense that I was spoiled. I was the boss's son in the sense that he expected 10 times more out of me than everyone else. And, you know, he'd have me like bossing around all these foremen and that are like 3 times my age. And, you know, it was super awkward and he fired me like 3 times. Yeah, it was nutty, but then working for the dealership was fun.
Well, once you survive working for your pop, and education at the Ford dealership, then you're like, I can handle any PR. I can handle any fashion. If the hardest person I have to deal with after this is Mark McNary, I'm fine. this is nothing. And I think you handle Mark very well. That's great. I'm very interested in, I mean, that car dealership is such a funny world of it's like a purely created world of the associations they're trying to do. So when I was recently, and I don't spend a lot of time in them, but was in the Volvo dealership, just I was obsessed with the furniture and the way they painted the walls and the photos of people kind of driving in misty coasts in Sweden. And it was just like completely reassuring. Of course, I loved all that stuff. And I thought, oh my God, is this working on me? Because I want the same kind of level of calm or something.
Yeah.
And it's like that's more like a non-dealer. I'm sure others are much more, you know, kind of masculine or try to convey some other feeling. But anyway, this was more like a Montessori school or something.
Everything was at your height. Everything was functional. You know, it's retail at the end of the day, like car dealerships, you know, it's not that much unlike other retail situations.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I would be curious to know what percentage of people who go into a dealership have they made up their mind already? I think it's probably way different back when you work there and people are getting the information from a television ad or a newspaper ad. Now we can do much more research, I think.
Yeah, I think, well, the thing is like, you don't know, you know, there's so many factors with, we just bought a car. We bought a Volvo actually. It was, you know, and I've spent a lot of time around that stuff and it's still just riddled with anxiety.
Sure.
It's painful. It's a terrible, I hate buying cars. Because you just don't know where all the fees are.
Right.
You know, they get you in like the depreciation in a lease, like the money factor, like there's like so many things that can just snipe you and, you know, it's very opaque and you have to really know. And you also, I hate negotiating. So
it's,
I mean,
tough.
With that sort of thing, I don't want to like argue over that stuff. You know, I don't want to go in there and like have to fight to get the best deal.
Right, right.
That drives me nuts.
If it's going to have some, like the sound system is one slight notch better. I think that was the idea behind Saturn or some other company that went out of business where they're like no pressure sales.
Yeah.
Total. And I went in. When I got my car, the first time I'd really kind of done it, my Volvo, and I don't even, not even going to deal with the cost, which wasn't crazy, but it was the guy, I used a line on a guy. Let's just say, I was like, what about a nice round 25,000? He's like, what about a nice round 26,000? And just like, just spanked me. I mean, like I had no, like, I just walked in there with like my big card just to try to knock off 1,000, whatever it was, or 31 to 30. I don't even remember, but he just completely, it is like if like a point guard, you know, who thinks he knows what he's doing, goes driving and the guy just like swatted it away. And like, are you kidding? Like you're on the JV team or the junior high team. And I'm here on starting on, you know, all
and
he state.
Said, oh, and Mr. Coggins, we'll give you we're not going to give you cash for your trade. We're going to give you a credit in our vending machine.
Well, I mean, talk about, talk about my famous negotiation where I gave my Saab to someone for a fishing rod. But that was because I was so humiliated when I got the Blue Bug value of it that I couldn't honestly bear, like, I thought I was going to crash the bluebook.com because if their computer punches out a number less than $1,000, they like alerts all the employees and they get around and start laughing. I had to delete that section.
You know, what's great for selling cars though is CarMax, actually, because you could just go there and they'll just give you a quote and then they give you this offer that's good for a week and then that's it. And you don't have to, you either take it or whatever. And they just write you a check.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get like the full retail value, but
right,
you get better than trading it in.
I just, we should think about like a category of something where you just always feel like you're getting the shaft. And it's like buying a car, selling a car, going like dealing with certain wine on certain wine lists. You're just like, I feel like whatever I get, this is not right. Something.
Yeah.
And that's
it's
such
like,
a
it's like funny... every taxi in Italy.
Exactly. And they're like, there's a huge thing in English that says you're not in Naples, you're not charged for your bags. And then it's like, $10 fee for what? Luggage. I'm like, I'm literally looking at something that says luggage.
There's That's all those rules. Like in Naples, there's a, it's a flat rate between yeah. the train station
and the port,
and the ferry. Right. Yeah, yeah. And the port. And so the people that don't know though, they always try to, they'll never just tell you that it's right. the flat rate.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to scandalize like all the, you know, Southern Italian taxi drivers, yeah. but I'd say fairly shady.
All I have to say about that is exact change is vital. Here's 20 euros for the 13 euro thing. Like, sorry. And you are so I'm like pretty dialed in with my fives and change. And I still give them a tip happily. I just don't want it to be like the 100% tip because they're lying to me.
Yeah.
It's mostly that I'm happy to pay the higher price. Just treat me. Like, give me some dignity while you give me the shot. Anyway, okay, I've got some others for you here,
okay,
Michael.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I've got one for you whenever okay. you're ready for me to jump in.
All right, give me one then.
Okay, it's not specific. All right,
I'm closing my eyes. I'm preparing. All right.
Okay. Deep breath here. Okay. I did my breathing. Minimalism
yes. or
versus maximalism. Because I see you in both of these places at
huge
some points.
Oh man, this is, you just completely destroyed my, like, I'm dealing with these minor, I mean, I literally have written on my list here, Oasis versus Pearl Jam, and you're just like going into like way more important stuff. No offense to Chris Black and Oasis fans. I think I like clarity of mind and I like simplicity and I like proven systems and I like packing strategies. So that goes in the side of minimalism, but I'm setting mm-hmm. that all. And I like people who don't bring too much when they fish. Also minimalism. Having said that, I love books and art and antiques and objects. And I think I'm probably more in a maximal interior is probably more where I would go. But I like minimalism with warmth. I like a minimal, like as far as design aesthetics go, that's mm-hmm. comfortable, that has good textures and colors and is warm and functional, isn't rigid and hostile. And this is a very long answer, but I'm going to go maximalism, even though half the things we talked about is getting rid of stuff and not needing certain things and how I like to pack light, but I guess I probably like to have more and then pull from more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tough one.
I think minimalism actually is harder than maximalism.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
because you need to have the correct, there's more emphasis on each thing. If you have one painting on a wall, it better be the right painting, or one rug yeah. on the floor. And that's why if you're really getting into kind of Japanese aesthetics and you're in a ryokan or something, and each branch of the flower in the vase, when it's the only thing in the room beside one pot, has this huge meaning or whatever is on the, there's a paper screen or whatever, which is quite exciting. And they know how to do it and we don't for the most part.
I think actually when you see, like when you go to some house in the desert or, you know, you just, when you know someone that can do minimalism interior wise, just really, really at a high level, I think often it's because they have multiple homes, right? So it's like...
So Tom Ford in Santa Fe or whatever.
I don't know. I mean, you know, we know Tom Ford has like many, many right. homes, right? So I'm sure like one of them, he just is like, I'm not putting anything in this right. place. It's like my right. space right. to think or something, right. you know?
No, that's a good... my feeling about minimalism, which is often practiced very well by certain people in Northern Italy and of some Milan people, is that the materials have to be very generous. Like if there's some marble, it should be nice. Or if there's mm-hmm. some wood, it should be rich. And then if you have you don't need a lot of, you know, clutter and objects, but the actual surfaces and materials have to have a warmth and generosity to them that counteracts the remove of everything else. So that would mm-hmm. be my mm-hmm. little theory on that. Good question. Thank hell, you. We could do the freaking minimal maximal. There's your... Five episodes minimum. You know, we're going to do when you and I do this one in person, I'm going to keep my computer away from your coffee, but we're going to do the Williams Coggins in person podcast. I think, I hope next week. Is that the plan?
Yeah, we're still on for that.
I like that.
I'm going to bring a special recording system, honestly.
I love it. Okay.
That'll make it easy for us to do. And we'll see if we can get some worse audio than we're used to.
I think people would be, it's like when you watch those early like Jim Jarmusch films and they're sort of like scratchy black and white. And then you see his later work. It's a much, much nicer production values, but it doesn't feel as authentic. And people are like, no, I want to go. I need Down by Law. I need old Jarmusch. All right, here's one for you. Levi's versus APC. You're the denim guy. You've had thousands of views on all sorts of platforms and stuff. And I think you're washing things, soaking them, all this stuff. You know denim. Obviously, I'm not in this world at all, but I think of like classic Levi's, APC, and I'm also tossing another V versus in there for double RL. So where do you fall down there?
Well, I think some real denim people would say none of the above. I think probably Levi's, to be honest. I mean, I just wear Levi's. We worked with them for a long time. I don't work for them now. And I think I just, you know, I have a bunch of holdover jeans from there.
Holdovers. But,
like I wear, you know, I only have like, I wear one pair and then I have three or four pairs like in reserve. You know, I sort of, I don't know, famously or infamously or, you know, had a little thing with, Jean Tui Tui. Jean Tui Tui over at APC at some point. And because we interviewed him and he was like mad that it was a video and he didn't realize we were filming it. And then they like demanded that we take it down and we're like really weird about it. And,
after off Mr. Porter?
No, like from ACL, like way back when. Oh. They were like in our building a few floors down. I would see them all the time and he was like, they knew who I was. So they're like, why don't you come? He's going to be here and like interview him. And anyway, there was like a whole thing about that. I thought it was like pretty annoying.
Wow.
I think ABC is like a brand is great, but I don't think like the quality totally warrants like the, I don't know. And it's like very cohesive in terms of aesthetics. And I like almost anything they kind of put out, I would appreciate. But in a way, I kind of see it as like a Vince or like Rag and Bone or I don't know. It's like it is very well put together, but it's not really like the vibe I want. And the label like doesn't do it for me. So I wouldn't say like APC denim. It's pretty classic and simple and understated. But like if you're going to do that, you might as well just go buy Uniqlo selvedge denim and spend like a third of the price.
How did APC, just remind me, how did they get into the kind of denim? Like, how did that become something they were known for 10 years ago or 15 years ago?
I think they just like focused on it. And I mean, I think APC, I don't know the whole history of the brand. And I'm sure there's people listening here that do, but I feel like it's been around for a while. I want to say it's like been around since like 94 or something, or like 2005. It's like been around for a long time. But I think that they just were good at making like good materials, like sort of essential pieces and just did a good job like with those cuts. And it was like, I think at a certain point it was, you know, good denim, really simple, like no external branding. It wasn't like flashy, it was raw. And I think people then, you know, they were doing it for like, I think it was like 125 or 150 bucks at a certain point. And, you know, this is like the, even if you go back to like when Diesel was popular and it was even more expensive, you know? So I think like they were just sort of seen as this like alternative, like or more artisanal, better version of a classic thing like Levi's, you know. So
interesting.
You know, the issue with Levi's is that it's just so complicated.
Oh my god, totally.
You know, it's like what jeans should I buy? It's like the 501 is the 501, and but then there's, you know, it's interesting. There's, I always found this like very very interesting and satisfying and intriguing that Levi's is selling at the same time, like 10 or 12 or 15 versions of the same model product, right? Like the 501 is sold in like all these different evolutions of it from the 60s, from the 40s, from, you know, whenever, from the 90s or whatever. So I always was like, that's amazing that like the 501 has evolved so much, right? And they still sell it. It's like Apple selling, you know, every iPhone generation, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's, I mean, Levi's is so, it's almost hard. They've entered that thing where it's just like part of, it's like Coke, you know, it's just like, it's in the hotel bar, you know, it's so ubiquitous. You can't even, it's easy to forget that that doesn't happen by accident, you know, that you just like, everybody knows what it is. And they, and there's a way to access it for everybody. But if you don't know what you want from it and go to their website, it's, you might as well be trying to figure out, you know, what book by an author who has 55 books you're going to read. I mean, there's just no way to,
It's like Nike, you know, Nike's it's the same way. It's like, they have all these different types of distribution. The business is in all these different places. It's like in Costco, it's in, you know, the coolest stores, tier zero or whatever. And, you know, it's like, if you were going to, you were like, I just want some to get some sneakers. Like, what should I buy? Like, it would be overwhelming, you know, like, I don't even know where to start with this.
Did you say that you, you wear one pair of jeans and then you have three in reserve? Is that the Williams approach?
I mean, I have a, I like a style that they phased out. So like when I knew it was getting phased out, I went and bought three or four pairs of that, that fit, because I knew I really liked it. So, and that's like a part of a line that still exists called Made and Crafted, but they had this fit called Tack and I really liked it. And so I just bought three or four pairs of it. And then I do wear some Uniqlo jeans, and I wear like, I'm not like a psycho, like denim, crazy denim person. Like the, that's why like the hardcore denim purist people, like, I don't think really like me, because I don't take it, you know, I don't go that deep in it. I think it's like a little overkill, but like, if that's what you're into, I'm, it's totally cool. Like, I don't mind, you know? Yeah.
It's one of those things that just gets people really revved in a way. It's like the Bronco, if it's getting, is it high or sitting high or low or the correct way, or are you all, but it seems like denim gets right onto that. And also like the Bronco, it's something that was, you know, it's functional, it had a purpose. There's a kind of blue collar way to do it. There's a fancier way to do it. And there's always going to be a little bit of friction there. It's the same with beer, right? And, and how much should something cost that you, it's supposed to be for a worker. And then you're getting it in double RL for whatever it is, $280.
I mean, what about tailor clothing? It's the same thing. It's like, that's not a good make, or that maker,
right?
You know, that, those, that tailor get, is full of shit, you know?
That, like, that's, but that, I, that to me goes into the, a different world. That would be more like certain whiskey and certain watches, where it's a little bit more about priding yourself on being an aficionado, which is annoying in a different way. Like, this is more of like some sort of principle that I think gets people even more emotional. I think there's, I think everyone is going to define themselves through certain things, but it's like, no, this, it, like, I can just see people, like, people get madder about denim than they do about other stuff. Or, and also because more people wear it than they do get into like rarefied Italian tailoring that honestly nobody cares about.
I mean, it is more like, it, it is more sort of readily available and intersecting with more people's lives. And, you know, it does have like work connotations. And so they think, you know, that you're, you know, well, some people, like, I would hear stuff like this where it's like, I'm co-opting workwear. It's like,
oh my God, I miss those days.
But I actually grew up like with all that stuff around, right? Like, I actually worked doing manual labor, like wearing, I actually wore Red Wings for work before I ever wore them because it was cool. Right. And so I, you know, I see that as like, that's not really who I am now, but like, there's part of that, you know, was in me, but I get it. It's, you know, it's not like, you know, the, it's not like I'm co-opting workwear as an aesthetic to try to like fake, like I'm blue collar or something, you know?
I think that was at a certain time, and
but I think
maybe,
denim,
you maybe stood for something that, that they, you were blamed for something other people did, not blamed, but people complained to you.
I don't even care. I see like denim, the denim world and that whole criticism, a lot of that stuff, I see it as one thing.
Yeah.
You know? So
interesting.
But it's like, if you want to be like hyper artisanal or like hyper, you know, conscious of like the exact denim, and you know that you've been to Japan and you've been to the mill or whatever, like, that's fine, dude. Like,
well, it's just funny how well, some people are going to take their obsession to a really extreme level. I think we should include a link to your watch piece that you did on Hodinkee, which I thought was really good. Michael was interviewed about being a watch collector. And I thought you struck a really good balance between like when you do something for pleasure, when you like learning more about it, but also when kind of enough is enough, sort of themes we've talked about here. But mm-hmm. I thought you were really funny about that. And it was really good.
I was a little sensitive about that whole thing because, you know, the watch people aren't going to see me as like a real collector, right? Where I wouldn't say I'm
and you're
like
getting it from both ends. You're like fake. The workwear people are mad at you. The high end watch collectors are mad at you. It's you can't leave your house.
I don't blame them. You know, I am a piece of shit. That's right.
No, it's honestly, I once told my dad and a guy who's basically like my godfather when I was young, I said, well, I have one group of friends who think I'm too, I don't know, literary and into these effete things, but then my artistic friends think I'm too used to hang out with, I don't know, other people. And he's like, that's the perfect place to be. That friction is good. And it's good to like whatever it is, denim and workwear and on your own terms and watches on your own terms. And if you get so far into the place where you're, I mean, I think one thing that's just funny to me at this point is why anybody in, you know, who's in their 40s, who spent enough time deciding they like wine or cars or watches gets so freaking mad about it. Like, can't you use it and get enjoyment out of it and not define yourself in opposition to someone else? Of course, like that's going to happen. But if I love to fly fish, I'm not going to get mad if someone does it in more technical gear and looks like a fool. Or I'm not going to get mad if someone does it in bamboo. It's just, there's different ways to do these things, but it's we're never going to get away from.
You will get mad when I show up with a Tenkara rod, though. You'll be furious.
I
would be,
if you can do it, I would like you to show me how to do it. I think there's just, we're so used to, and I think the so many pressures in our world make us get more annoyed by, because people are showing their collections or whatever it is, or. And obviously I do get mad at it too, but it's just funny to me where people like the watch people are coming to get you or something. Good grief. Just let's relax everybody, especially because everyone's going to go through the cycle themselves, you know, they're going to cycle out and say, I wear these three watches and they make me happy.
And I mean, I personally think, you know, and this is something I've been trying to formulate into a newsletter. But there's, you know, it's a couple of things. It's, to me, it's like a lot of pressure to conform is a big factor in, you know, collecting or your interests. And then the other thing is like this, you know, it's like the boredom cycle, you know, like you just do it because you need to fill your life with something, you know. I don't know. Like, I'm not trying to be hypercritical of like any of this stuff. And I'm, you know, I've done all of it and I'm guilty of anything, you know, that we could, any criticism we could lob at this. But well, now I step back, like to watch collecting, I'm like, I don't know, like how much there is to this, you know?
Well, I sometimes, and it's funny about denim, that seems interesting to me that you have this idea that you buy something raw or rough or however, and you break it in, and that is some sign of, you know, your connection to that product, right? Mm-hmm, that you've kind of earned its creases or fades or whatever. And then someone says, well, I don't want to go through that process. I'm just going to buy it like that. Yeah. And then you're like, okay, well, that, what do we think about that? Like, either that's really smart because you're skipping all this hard part, or that's an undeserved shortcut. Like, I don't know the answer that. And then you say, well, someone says, well, I don't, I'm going to buy a record player because I can just see that getting people really revved up. Oh, some rich guy comes in and just gets the like perfect thing. And it just drives people insane. Like, you have to earn, you know, work your way up before you're ready for this. You don't even appreciate it. You don't even like John Coltrane and you don't know which one to listen to. You're like, whoa, slow down. I mean, it's just funny to me how everyone gets revved up. I mean, I remember, I think when Double RL started, some of the things they sold had been guaranteed to be worn by ranchers and, you know, Colorado or something. Is just crazy. I mean, it just is a funny way. And I definitely like try to buy things sometimes that are already worn in. It's just quicker to get to the place that I want. But it's just interesting the way people are so protective about, you can't drive that Bronco. In any case, what else do we have on our versus list?
If something was worn by a rancher, if that, I don't see that as a selling point.
Neither do I.
That is creepy.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else on my versus list. Really.
I got some verses.
All I have is the one.
That was so good. It was almost the perfect question. If you had started with that, it would have just broken this whole thing and we wouldn't have gone anywhere. Well, I think you're going to give some, excuse me, some answers, because this is right in the zone. So I had Rolex versus Omega. Mm-hmm. So do you have strong feelings about that?
Yeah, Rolex. Okay. I mean, I think Rolex is just on a different level than anything, but like the Patek people are going to say that's bullshit and, you know, it's too mass and whatever. I don't know. I think like collectability value wise, like Rolex, you can't go wrong. Right.
Okay, good. I like, this will be like quick hits. I have another one. I don't know. My assistant gave this to me, so I don't know what it means. It just says Zangardi versus Levine. I mean, thoughts on that? I
don't... I'm going to go with Zangardi on that one due to like longevity.
Neither listens, so it's okay.
neither we know they don't listen because they don't pay, you know. We see everyone that's subscribed.
We see all.
Yeah,
I have exactly. Playoff baseball versus playoff basketball.
I'd say, I mean, I don't think I much prefer to watch the NBA on TV. But I do think I don't know. Yeah, that's really hard, but I think probably baseball.
It's funny because growing up, I was a baseball person, love the sport, love the rhythm, love going to games. I pressed the wrong button. I thought I was muting and I'm just coughing right into this. I got to blame my assistant for this.
Don't worry. The audio engineer will clean this up.
Well, with Brian Eno fixes all these things, but it's like, I don't watch baseball so much anymore. But when the playoffs start, it helps if there are fans in the stadium, obviously, but just the excruciating, like it's designed to be like the perfectly intense sport, even though I'm much more aware of NBA narratives, for lack of a better word, and listen to NBA podcasts and follow along. But I love to see an NBA playoff game when it's really like towards the end and they're really finally trying. But some playoff baseball gets me going. But I do have to look up if the Tampa Bay Rays are involved because I never know who any of their players are since Longoria left.
Yeah, it's it's hard to watch the baseball without the fans, and the fans bring so much energy to the playoffs, and it's such a longer thing.
Right,
those games last so long, and so there's just that natural built-in sort of ebb and flow of that whole game versus an NBA game, which I feel like it's a little bit quicker.
You know what it's going to be.
All right.
Gelato versus ice cream.
Gelato. I don't know. Depends on like the ice cream, but generally, I think gelato is a little bit. There's a little bit more higher fat content in gelato.
Whatever it is,
it's not as like sugary sweet. I feel like it's and I think the flavors are better. I think gelato.
What's the gelato scene like in LA? Is it easy to find? Hard to find?
I don't know. I don't really eat much. There's not much. I don't think. Like, and generally, I think if I see it here in the States, I probably just don't. I'm not like a big ice cream person. The thing I really like is like the soft serve, like.
Oh yeah,
Little League place, like after your Little League game you would go and get soft serve, like that's actually what I like if I'm here, but there's not a lot of that here either. There's like fancy ice cream places here like McConnell's, which are okay, you know.
There's when the weather starts
that place in the Village though, Big Gay Ice Cream, I mean I love that place.
I hit up the Mr. Softy when the weather starts getting warm, and you know, vanilla cone dipped in chocolate, $4, extra napkins. And I just stand like kind of at a discreet distance and away from the public and just completely destroy it. Gets like totally in my beard, like a disgusting human, and hope I don't see anybody I know, or anybody who's with young children and anyone who's like, could be frightened. Just men eating ice cream in public. I don't know. It's a strange, like, it's not, I mean, if I see an old Italian guy in the afternoon walking down the street eating some like pistachio gelato, like that's really dignified. And it's like a little pleasure. He gives himself, he walks and, you know, down the street, he probably hasn't paid taxes in 40 years. You know, this guy's just enjoying life. But if it's me, like, I'm just not like, you know, and beards and ice cream also not a great combo.
Sorry. I never, that's funny. Do you prefer to the Mr. Softy brand, or do you care if it's like the knockoff?
No, yeah. I prefer Mr. Softy, but I'll go outside of it. And I once was driving up on a Friday night up a highway I'd never been up to get to kind of Connecticut or something. And we went a different way. I was the passenger, and we went by the Mr. Soccer, like where they're all parked. And like the last one was going in and it was this huge thing. It was like a fleet of trucks, like all the UPS trucks, but Mr. Softy with the light in. And I was like, this is incredible. There's 100 of these and they're just all going to sleep at night on a June evening. And I thought this is just absolutely wild and would be maybe a very
New Yorker cover. Have you ever read the, that would be, that's amazing. There's an article in the New York Times about the wars that those guys would fight, just like about their turf. I guess it's like super violent and like crazy. And they're like always fighting over certain corners and whatever. It's wild.
Well, someone told me that was even the way it is with food trucks. And these guys would go and the brothers would wait just to, you know, these guys making kebabs or whatever. And that it's not, you know, they're all very friendly to you, but like to get the correct corner back when people went to their offices on 6th Ave and 44th or whatever, it's like, that's contested territory or something. They've been there since 5 a.m. Oh my goodness.
What else you got?
We had from before, it was LeBron versus Jim Brown. This is like Cleveland, you know. It's got to be LeBron. I'm jumping in there. I mean,
I think it's Jim Brown. You know, he stayed in Cleveland. He never left. I mean, Jim Brown's like the greatest running back of all time, basically. I watched that Netflix. It was like I don't know. It was like about Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Jim Brown.
That movie.
Yeah.
A Night in Miami or something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And I never realized Jim Brown was from St. Simon's Island, which is where I've gone like every summer my whole life.
Really?
Yeah, weirdly, not in the summer always, but we did go down a lot in the summer. But I have a bunch of family that's from down there. Huh. It was pretty surprising. But I think Jim Brown, but I think, you know, not take anything away from LeBron. But
this is more vague and this is more theoretical. I have child number one versus child number two. You can just interpret that anyway. See, I'm a child number one. It could be your child. It could be you as if you're the first child.
I'm the second child. Okay. I don't know. It's hard. The first child I think is unique in a way. But I don't think like it makes you, I don't know. You can't love like, I don't know. Some people do. It definitely exists where people love one child more than the other. I'm not like that. And I think, you know, the first child, it's like, you've never seen that. And right. So to me, like, I think just experiencing the birth, just having never gone through it, is much, much, much more impactful. Mm-hmm. I always thought when people said, you know, just it's amazing when it happens. I did not believe that it was true. Like I thought it was, how could it be this amazing? I just don't understand. And then I experienced it and it was like it was like CGI. Like I couldn't believe what my eyes were seeing. So in that sense, like it was, I'd say child number one, but
all right, good. I like it. I do have on here Oasis versus Pearl Jam. It's just a funny comparison to me. I don't know why.
I would say Pearl Jam, but I think in the time Pearl Jam, but later Oasis. Oh,
good,
because
good.
Maybe I didn't understand Oasis at the time. And then in, you know, listening to it all later.
It's funny to me, Pearl Jam, I feel oddly more strongly towards them now. And I don't know if it's because we have sort of fewer American heroes or something, or I got caught up in some total nonsense between Nirvana versus Pearl Jam, speaking of verses, and speaking of Pearl Jam's record versus for that matter. And, and like what it meant to sell out. And there was some documentary I watched on an airplane, like the perfect mediocre documentary to watch on an airplane about Pearl Jam. And actually, I think it was by Cameron Crowe, which oddly, it begins with him looking in the camera and like, okay, the last thing I want to see in a Pearl Jam documentary is Cameron Crowe in modern day. In any case, it got so into the details of like Pearl Jam was interviewed by Time, but they ended up on the cover and they were like, no, we didn't know. We didn't want to be on the cover. Speaking of your guy being videoed for ACL, and he's like, they thought it because it made it seem like they had sold out, quote unquote. And I thought, I think I like got too caught up in that when I was young. And I was like, maybe they did sell out and Kurt Cobain would never do that. And he's wearing a cardigan. And then they showed also
Nirvana like sold out. That's all they would do is sell out. Like they were all selling out.
At that time, it seemed like you were encouraged to take a side when it's just absurd to do that. Though this is part of being a fan. And it just, the stakes seem so raised, especially at that time in our lives when you're 15 or 20 or 25 or whatever. And
as a civilization, we're beyond the selling out thing.
Now we totally are. That's why it's so crazy, because
which
now,
is good. I like it.
But it's funny to go back and think about that time, because then they were so, there was some idea of this virtue of, and I think now we've swung too far the other way, where people do all sorts of crappy collaborations, whoops, you know, for Target or whatever it is, or Kmart or JCPenney. And nobody, and people are like, wait, shouldn't you be doing something a little bit better than that? But they're like, well, obviously it's a huge payday, so who cares? Someone's doing a sandwich with McDonald's. It's like, are you kidding me?
Travis Scott. Yeah, I think that's, you know,
I don't keep up with all that stuff. I just know that it bothers me.
Well, I don't know why that would bother you. I mean, I like rap because the rap whole community is like, we don't care. We're just going to get the money, you know, like that to me is like, that's as pure as it gets.
Are you, right? Are you a member of the rap community? Can I just ask?
Obviously.
I love anything where it's like, I read this the other day. And I think that someone referred to me as a menswear elder statesman. I've been like dealing with this for the last 72 hours, trying to process how I feel about it.
When does your hymn, is this like before they learned about your hymns collaboration that you're doing?
Right, exactly. A menswear elder says, when it's like, I think this is supposed to make me feel, not that they cared. At first I was like, I think this makes me feel okay. And then it's embarrassing, or it's embarrassing and then I feel okay. It's just a funny thing. But then it's like the menswear community, the tailoring community, the whatever community, is funny to me.
Okay, I have one for you that I just thought of. And it's a band thing, you know, it's around that.
I like it.
Coldplay or Dave Matthews Band?
Oh my God. Awful in their own way. Okay, well, I will say that.
You have to choose one. That's okay,
this is an evil one. I will say I'm embarrassed, but I'm going to have to say Coldplay. Oh. No, Dave Matthews, because I went to a Dave Matthews Band show. In college, there was some committee that could afford to bring one band to campus each year. And it was just always awful. The situation was, it was a big deal that night, and everybody went, and everyone speculated where they would go afterward and who they would, if they would stay on campus and part. And I think one year it was Tribe Called Quest or something. And the next year was a Dave Matthews Band, which somehow was like, unfortunately, the perfect band for college in Maine. And I never owned a Dave Matthews record, but I did. There was one long song that I, when they played live, 20-year-old David Coggins was like feeling it. I don't know, them guys playing the fiddle or something. It was just a guy's jamming.
Was it an electric fiddle?
There was one moment where I felt like pretty good. And then, for the next 20 years, I was like, I'm embarrassed how into it I was. I didn't mercifully did not buy any merch.
That's funny. I was going to say, you can't, you know, Coldplay is like still putting out records.
There's different ways things are annoying. There's like, something can be annoying because you actually liked it and you're annoyed that you fell for it. Right. So that's often things that you like when you were younger. And so you say, well, I shouldn't have, but it's understandable. Maybe you liked even like Sammy Hagar, Van Halen, like some of that's like, can't believe I was into that. But it's not annoying. It's just embarrassing. And then there's something that's annoying because you're hopefully smart enough to be able to quantify exactly what's bad about it. And that, I think that's sort of where Coldplay is. And I'm mostly interested in them because it's like, how do you make so many people so mad in a very specific way? Like if you set out to do it, you couldn't really do it unless you were with those guys making those fake documentaries, like not Spinal Tap, but like those types of guys where they're like doing it. Like if it turned out that everyone in Coldplay was actually from Canada and this all was a big like joke, then that would be like the most brilliant thing anyone's ever done. Cause you're like, you so perfectly were annoying to like millions of people. It's never been done before. It was a performance art project for 15 years. Like when Joaquin Phoenix went on Letterman and didn't speak, but I just can't believe how they can make it sort of, sometimes Gwyneth Paltrow gets into that in speaking with Coldplay. It's like conscious uncoupling. It's like, did you get into the make the most annoying phrase of all time to describe divorce? Like you couldn't do it any, like a conscious uncoupling. You can't really do it anymore
Now they call that co-parenting or something.
Oh my goodness. Well, there's always going to be these new phrases. They just seem to invent that one.
If you break up, you want to hate each other. That's where you're at. You're like,
I want it to be absolutely
contentious.
Yeah, highly contentious. I want to change lyrics and songs. I want people off the mantle. I want photos totally. I don't want J-Lo and A-Rod's things, any of these product collaborations. I want the prenup enforced. I just want this thing cut down the middle.
I was trying to think of another one that led me to Coldplay, Dave Matthews, which was Arctic Monkeys and Someone, but I couldn't come up with the Streets, Coggins doesn't even know who the Streets is.
There were definitely an era where it seemed like all the bands had sort of the same names and I got confused. And I think I was even going to South by Southwest back then. And I still don't understand that. I think this will be, we've done about not quite 40 podcasts, but that's not bad for a couple of semi-employed people. And now I think we should do the Versus episode every year. So if we can make it another year or every 6 months, I like this. I think the Versus episode is good.
I think it's good. You know, yeah. It's interesting when you say we've done 40 episodes. So that's, you know, one work week basically. When you think about
why am I so exhausted?
This seems like a lot. It seems like it was more than just one work week, but
well, you've got to raise the, you know, standing desk up. You've got to do the microphone.
I mean, I did half of these sitting down. I mean, that was a lot of work, you know, just,
a work week. That's kind of demoralizing. Let's think of it. I mean, but then if you can drive, you could drive across the country, you could drive across the country and listen to them all. So why would you want to?
I can string them all together if someone wants. I'll hit you with the Dropbox.
Oh my God. Then you got the, I would rather watch Godfather, I don't know, five times in a row.
How long is it going to take? I haven't read your book yet all the way. I've read chapters. How long would it take longer to read it or just listen to it?
Read it. No, it's longer to listen. It's 7.5 hours to listen. To read will take.
Do you think I can read the whole book on a flight from LA to New York?
Yep.
Okay.
And I actually, it's fun. It's funny to listen to it, but honestly, if you read it yourself, you get a little more like a sense of the writing, a sense of when things are going to end, a sense of the wordplay, and just it. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, a certain type of book should be that has sort of literary aspirations should probably be read, especially because a lot of this book isn't dialogue. Books that have dialogue.
Do you have literary aspirations?
I think I'm going to just come out and say, yeah. I mean, we tried to make it, you know, there's hopefully an element of poetry and humor that just cannot quite translate to him, to someone reading it because you just interact with it in a different way.
Is that a real person? I thought that guy was I thought that was artificial intelligence reading it.
It's Dave Matthews' brother, actually. they're not speaking. He needs to make a little coin, as they say.
Derek Matthews. Mark Matthews.
If I found out later that it was Dave Matthews' brother, tough beat.
I'm gonna get Tim Reynolds to do an accompaniment for the audiobook, and he'll like play with you like you're the Dave Matthews, and then it'll be like Live at Luther College.
I like
part two. I'm gonna read it. I got the Axe Handbook, Peter Buchanan Smith's book up next, you know, in front of you. Yeah. So I'm going to read that first. That seems more practical.
He does. He cut down every piece of tree that they made every paper, every book out of was cut down by him, guaranteed. If you get the limited edition, then they were cut down by him.
Got that book and I'm going to do a podcast with him or do an interview. He's an interesting guy, but that book is so amazingly dense with Axe stuff. It's incredible. It's like everything you could ever possibly want to know about Axe. Everything.
They had the title just sitting there, Axe to Grind, but no, you took the higher road and you didn't do it. That's the Michael Williams. my lying enemies. So next week it's going to be face to face. That's the plan, right?
Are we going to do something special?
We'll have our people.
Should we shut down 11 Madison Park and just record?
We've got some live music in the back. I like it. Now we've got Arctic Monkeys. They do more instrumental stuff now. It'll be perfect.
Concerts are back now.
Yeah, you know, I like it. Well, you're coming to New York at a good time, so I'm looking forward to seeing you.
I'm gonna FaceTime you loudly from the Delta Lounge and just walk around.
I love it. Yeah, please.
People will love that.
All right, take care, Michael.
All right. Talk. You've been listening to a free preview of Central Division, a podcast and newsletter between David Coggins and Michael Williams. To access all of our podcasts and all of our newsletters, visit centraldivision.substack.com. Thank you.